Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Greetings. With God's name, the most merciful benefactor, the most merciful redeemer. All praise is due to Allah alone. I greet you in the greetings of peace of Assalamu alaikum. My beloved audience, it's a very wonderful evening today. We feel the chill coming in here in New Jersey. Starting the winter is on its way. Very glad to be here this evening with you. Bring you another tremendous subject. This is your daily program that you're listening to now. It comes on AM 360. Tonight the program is Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. And I am the host, Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African Bilalian American Griot. And I'm here every Tuesday between 5 and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Today we want to get into a very important subject. And the subject is something that we all have to pay close attention to. We have the views. Sometimes we have other dynamic guests. And tonight we chose the, one of our platforms we use here is the open mic night. At least once a month we have the open mic and try to get your opinion. So you actually are the guest tonight. You, the listening audience, are the guests, and you had time to answer questions and talk about some of the things you want to talk about in the midst of discussing our subject. But before we get into that, we want to just go over a few prerequisites to making comments. And how do you get in to make a comment? Well, if you want to make a comment on a subject, at least we asked you for it to be a recent subject and or be one of the subjects we've discussed here in the past on our program, so we all can be pretty much in tune with the discussion or the questions, and try to give as much time as you need to explain yourself. But remember, we have other guests, other members of the audience that may want to say something. Just have that in mind, but we're not pushing you to cut it short, because we want you to be able to, on this evening, we want you to be able to give your opinion, your total opinion, as to a particular subject we're dealing with or something you have on your mind. The election just ended. Many people were talking about the election, pros and cons, African Americans benefit, not benefit. That could be an open subject that mostly you can find anywhere at any time now. Some people were disappointed. Some people were elated. So we went both ways in elections. I myself have been around to see many presidents come and go, so I know that the sun is going to rise tomorrow, and I conduct myself accordingly. And I'm not that the world is not coming to an end, and I know that based on the past history, and not coming to an end because of something like this an election or anything of that nature. But we do want to just give you some time to talk about those things you wish to talk about. We want to deal with those issues. I want to give a idea about our point this evening. Our subject matter every week is inheriting the power of mental freedom. So if we are inheriting the power to freedom, we know that that is talking about knowledge. And most time we talk about knowledge of self, in our case, the African-American community, we are here. More concerned with the knowledge of self. Self comes first, and in most cases, when we do our research, we find that that's true throughout the world. And most people think of self as a prerequisite to helping anything or anyone else. So we do have that here, conscious. We do have that same interest. And we want to encourage you to think like that. We know all African Americans don't think in a collective. And it's not so much because we just do not think in a collective as opposed to others who do. But it's, we know we have gone through some changes. We won't use the term change. In fact, what we've gone through is not a change. What we've gone through is a development. We have gone through the concept of the Africans being brought to this part of the world in North America here, the United States of North America, but they have been brought to other parts too. But we're specifically dealing with the ones brought here. So we're not talking about they're changing from what they were, what we were in Africa. What we were in Africa were different tribes, different cultures, different languages. So we weren't one thing. We weren't one group. We wasn't one culture at the time of the slave trade, at the time of this colonial America. But what we do know, across all the evidence shows, that we basically came from the same area, and that was the western part of Africa. Most of us are descendants from the western part of Africa. And second thing we do know is that there was a process that went on here in America of mixing, allowing the tribes to mix one another with another, sexually speaking, and the Native American who was here. Same thing happened, and they became part of our bloodline. European Americans, especially the Scottish and the English and German, they became part of our bloodline too in that same process. Regardless on how it happened, whether there was a great deal of raping or consent on both parties, that's not as important as it happened. It happened. That's what's important. But we're looking at the evidence now as to what did this produce. And we discussed on the program several times, and we in hope that you are looking at and discussing some of these things yourself. We discussed on the program several times that there is a uniqueness about the African-American people, those who came through slavery and in this part of North America that we call the United States of America. There's a uniqueness that's present in us, the same as the uniqueness is present in Chinese or the Japanese or whoever or whatever group they come from. Everyone has a uniqueness. And we have found that the African who was brought to North America in the United States of America has that quality also, a uniqueness about our people. And we see it expressed in many different ways. One thing that causes us to stand out more than any other group who have been part of the slave trade or part of the colonialization of the world by the European, that is that during a period of our time from about 1882 to 1886, around that time they had outlawed in America, the United States of America, slave trade. They outlawed slave trade. Slaves could not be transported to this part of the world, meaning North America, United States of America, after that time. England was the first to put those laws out. England, the King of Great Britain, they were the first to say no more slave trade. No slaves can be carried on their ships to North America anymore. Around that time, 1886, during that time. And another period that took place during that 1800 time, that the slave trade stopped, and the United States also had themselves, the slave trade also made laws against it during the same period of time, about a year later after Great Britain. What that did, that caused another situation to happen in North America that didn't happen as much in South America, Brazil, all the countries where they had slaves and had a great deal more slaves there than they had here in North America. Only 5% of the Africans brought to the Americas came to the part we call the United States of America. But something happened here that didn't happen in any kind of abundance in the other parts of the world. Could not bring slaves into America anymore. The slave masters began to breed the slaves. A massive slave breeding went on, and it was so impacting that they don't even give the outline in terms of what happened. When I say they, I'm talking about the government officials now. Government officials and those people who report facts and figures. They didn't give the actual reports necessary for you and I to get an understanding of what that meant. What was the impact of that? What was the impact of the slave breeding process? They tell us about how the slave masters raped the women and so forth and so on, how women were put in a line and they had the stronger buck would breed as many women as he could, and all those tales they tell us. But what they don't tell us, impact of slave breeding on the potential and on the actual output of the people who were bred in terms of energy, in terms of knowledge, in terms of skill, in terms of physicality, as they can who get bigger, stronger, faster, but the intellect also was changing because it was a physical transformation was taking place. And the brain is part of that physical transformation. The brain is part of the physical transformation that took place during this time of breeding, 1910. They did a census, took the census. And they had in 1810, they said that 1.3 million people, Africans, were in this part of the world. That's in the 1810 census. Now, we know there was people hiding out in different places, but this is the census. And of that 1.3 million Africans who were here, 1.19 million of them were slaves. So there's a good chance that they were part of that breeding that took place. And we want to put a few minutes on this because it's so important. And it's important for the African-American to grasp this. The European-American already knows the importance of it because they have the statistics. They have the numbers. They also have data, and they also have things happen over the years that verify much of what I'm getting ready to talk with you about. But it's you, the African American, is the one who has little to no knowledge of the importance of this process that took place, we would say coincidentally, the outcome that occurred coincidentally. They didn't intend for the outcome that did occur. They didn't intend for that to happen. The slave master was only interested in trying to make more money by slave breeding so they could sell those slaves to people who still had large plantations. Now, remember now, we're talking about 1.19 million of the Africans who were here were enslaved. Time when the Revolutionary War began in around in 1865, around that time, 1865. Now we're talking about the census was taken in 50 years earlier for those numbers. At that time, they estimate, and some of the records show, we want to withdraw that term estimate. We're talking about records now. We're talking about records that were kept by the slave owners and masters because it was so important in that time so people knew exactly their product. Because remember, slaves were like chattel slavery. It was like not just a foot, they were owned, possession of the slave master. And they would keep record of the what they own and the outcome of that, the same as they would keep records on their jewelry and their equipment, their livestock. They kept records of it. And this is what we are talking about now. We are talking about the records. This is not just a we standing on the barbershop corner talking and that kind of thing. No, or in the beauty parlor. We're not. This is not about that. This is about things that we can prove, facts and figures that show the evidence of what I'm about to say. This is so very important for the African American people to grasp. If we can't grasp this, if we don't grasp this, we can grasp it, but we just may not for various reasons. But if we don't grasp this, then the European Americans are going to continue to put over on us schemes and concepts that take us out of the race, take us out of the race for growth and development, and put us on a track of extinction, because that's where they are interested in putting the African-American people. Okay, now let's not lose these numbers here. Remember, at the census in 1810, those census show that it was 1.3 million Africans in America, the United States of America, and 1.19 of those millions of Africans were slaves. That now you have a small amount of 800,000 or so that were free and, you know, did pretty much what they wanted to. But the rest were slaves. The number I'm about to give you, 1861, they calculated the African population, majority slaves again, grew to 4.4 million people. Now we're talking about doubling, almost tripling, in a way tripling, the amount of Africans that were here before the breeding process. Before the breeding process. See, they would tell us, in words, and if we don't do any research, that the breeding wasn't no big deal. It wasn't no big thing. They're breeding. You know, that was just some bad slave masters who wanted to rape the women and so forth and so on and treat the other ones bad. That was just terrible, terrible, terrible. People did terrible things during that time. They wanted to leave you with that. They wanted to leave you with such a negative concept that you won't look into how this actually formulated the African people into another people, into a different people. Not just another people, but a different people with special characteristics. Not just a uniqueness, but a uniqueness that seemed to have an ability to excel those uniquenesses of other folk who were here before us, other cultures and other races. How do we know that? All right? You are living in a time where the results of this is out. You heard of Henrietta Lacks. Henrietta Lacks was one who African American who had a cancer, and it took it to Johns Hopkins University Hospital, and they surgically removed the cancer cells and put the cancer cells into a petri dish, meaning trying to keep them alive so they can use it for other forms of medicine. Now, up until this time, they couldn't do that with any cells for anybody, anywhere in the world. Now, here in the 1960s, they're able to take an African-American from that gene pool that we were just talking about. We're talking about the genes, how the genes, one gene mixing with another gene, the gene that has the stronger or the dominant will become the dominant action, the dominant one in that relationship. So we're looking at Henrietta Lacks. They took that cell found out it would live, and they said it could live eternally. And they found not only that they could do that, they can use that cell to make other medicines. That's how they got the cure for polio. That's how they got the cure for many, many other diseases and cancers all over the world. All the scientists across the world are using that particular process from the, they call it the Lax gene, the Hela gene. They slip it right past us. That gene came from an African-American who went through the same process we are discussing right now. Now, what are the odds? We don't even have to go into tell us the facts. What are the odds that that was the only African-American from that gene pool, the genes were brought to such a level, a high degree? There's no odds that can happen. The odds are too great that particular idea about the Henrietta Lacks gene, that genetic pool being the only one in the whole African American, four million was more than that. Now, more than that time when Henrietta Lacks took away, was up in the 20s and 30 million. Now we have 42 million people. Only gene like that. They would gladly tell the African American that, because now that means if you didn't believe that, you're going to do more research. Okay, then what does that mean? What does that mean that these genes were superior to other genes? What does that mean? What is that calculating to in terms of our awareness and our ability to do what we want to do in the world as African Americans? The odds are that there were many genes with that same characteristic that was in the Henrietta Lacks gene. They've been doing tests on African Americans since we've been here. Now, I know many of you heard of the Tuskegee test when they tested the Africans on the syphilis, gave them syphilis to see just how the genes would react to that program. That tells us they already were hip. They already were up. They already had an idea about the genetic makeup of the African people has something to it more than in the European people. To use our own ability to think. We can't allow the European American to think for us. We got scholars. We got educators. Even though we agree, and most of us would agree, that they have also been tainted by the education of the European system. They believed in themselves and exercised that degree of freedom that comes with the inheritance. Inheriting of mental freedom. Inheriting that power that it has. Mental freedom has. It has the power to change things, the power to move forward. Now, not only Henrietta Lacks, that's just something they tell you about. And the scientists don't come out and tell us that. And some of these other European Americans who have a little scholarly wherewithal about them, and they get curious about things that are going on. And so this idea about the Henrietta Lacks gene, it was an author who wanted to find out about this lady whose people weren't getting any money for these experiments that were done on her. So she wrote a book on it. So others started, then finally the scientific group came out with the truth. They start talking about it then. Then they start telling them, well, yeah, that happened, and we found that Henrietta gene, they call it the Hela gene, that could help cure many, many people, many thousands of people. And they made, the European American made billions of dollars off of it and gave the African Americans nothing. Now, the family has been struggling to get some of it, but what about the African-American people? They don't even get the credit for having a genetic makeup that has the possibility, and we're saying possibility loosely here because it actually happened, so it's more than possible. But I'm saying possibility because they haven't given us a count on how many other African Americans have this genetic makeup. The African American people have a uniqueness about them. And this uniqueness was caused by the development, the whole slave situation. We don't have to worry about the traumas and all those kind of things. Forget about the traumas. And they try to make us think we still got those traumas of the slave to it. But forget about those. We have enough proof that 32 time after segregation came in. Segregation came in about 1896, where they said that segregation was constitutional. Even during that time, the African American people built the strongest and most successful financial communities in the country, not just amongst themselves, but the statistics says that their real estate holdings was outgrowing the European real estate holdings during that time. We were establishing banks much faster at a much higher rate. You've heard of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That was just a district. That wasn't a country. I mean, that wasn't a town. That was just a district. It was called the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they harnessed their energy and intellect and became so financially strong that the European would do business in that Greenwood District before they would go over across the street to other banks that were run by European banks and scholars over on the other side of town. They would do business with the bankers in the Greenwood District first, with the African-American developers. This is history. These are records that have been kept. Because you know, that area, Tulsa, Oklahoma, was like the queen city of oil. The Oklahoma had become, along with Texas, big oil producers. We've had a brother down in Wee Walker. He was named the Black Panther by the Native Americans because he was so smart. Panthers are supposed to be very smart creatures and have a lot of wit about them. And because he was dark-complected, they called him the Black Panther. See, it wasn't no insult then. He owned oil wells. He became a lawyer. African Americans owned oil wells during that time. And there's one that you see every now and then on this history station. Well, you see this family who came from that time in that area is considered to be the richest, one of the richest families in America, and definitely the richest African-American family in America because of that, what was going on in that time about African-Americans making progress. In 1932, they published a book called The Negro Market. The European published it, not on their own. They weren't trying to do something great for African-Americans. But they published the book, and they published it at the bequest of a company called the Negro Press. That was a company formed by several African Americans, who many of them became very wealthy, to really give an idea on how wealthy the African American community had become. And it was a viable market. They was trying to get advertisers to advertise in their newspapers and in their press. They're trying to get the European advertisers to buy in on the idea. So they went to this company called the Zeff Company, W.B. Zeff Company, in Chicago. They had three different places, Chicago, New York, and Atlanta. Them to do a total research of the whole country, how the African-American people were progressing, even during the Jim Crow era. Now, this is very important that we understand what time this was, when this happened, and what are the statistics. We need to start working from statistics and facts. And if a European gives us something, that European American gives us something that he calls statistics and facts, we need to check it and double check it and then do our own research on it. Get into a habit coming to conclusions, a logical conclusion from our own energies. They said, and this, not only did they point out that the African Americans were growing faster than the European American in real estate holdings. They said in this book, in this booklet, it was actually a book because it was designed like a magazine for the European American to see how much progress the African American were making, to encourage them to advertise in their magazines and in their newspapers, and tell about so they can get some money coming into the European community from the African American community. Because at that time, a dollar in the African American community would go around about 100 and some times before they would go. You could almost put a dollar at the beginning of the year in the African American community, and it wouldn't even, by the year end, it wouldn't have gone through the African American community because it's been used that many times, over and over and over, building different things and developing different things. These are the kind of facts that they don't like to tell you, but they give it to you in dribs and drabs. Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, somebody, George Washington Carver, then 2 years later, oh, yeah, Booker T. Washington, then another year. They don't tell us that all of that, what they dribbling and drabbling out, was happening at the same time in the same places throughout America, growing faster than Chinatown. Growing faster than Little Italy. In fact, this booklet, Rafferty Logan wrote in the part about, he did a segment in there called Isolation and Self-Sufficiency of the American Negro. And in that, he said that the facts have come up that the African, they called the Negro at that time, that the Negro was affected by the commerce the same as anyone else, any other group. But evidence shows that the Negro has grown, come as self-sufficient during that particular time than any nation would have done. Now, the word was nation. The word wasn't group, and the word wasn't community. And the word wasn't even nationality. The word said nation. This is what the comparison was. The comparison was being, because we were too big to just say we were a community. We used that term, community, but we were too big. We were way too big, economically speaking, educationally speaking. All of those things was too big to say community. We say those words now loosely because we're not sure what the words really mean. But when we really mean and look and see what the participation of the people was about, you will find that we were participating not like a community. We were participating not like a group. We were functioning like a nation. This is why they used that term in 1932. They used that term, we would become as self-sufficient as any nation would have come in the same circumstances. Now, remember now, we just pointed out about the Henrietta Lacks genes, right? How that was significant. Now, let's put some more significance to all of this. See, they keep this information so spread out. And every now and then, want to come on YouTube or something and say, "Oh yeah, Africans were treated very poorly and during the slavery. We feel very bad about those terrible, terrible slave masters who treated them so badly. We if we could do something about it, we would do something about it. But they're gone now. But they come up with those sad stories. You know how that works. But the reality of it all is that statistically speaking, the evidence The evidence is there, and the facts are supported by that evidence. That something took place much greater, much bigger than just the raping of the slaves, and that's a terrible thing, but much bigger, much greater than the raping of the slaves, the beating of the slaves, the turning of the slaves to all bad treatment. The bigger thing that was happening during that time is that the genetic makeup of the African was changing. The genetic makeup of the African was changing to be different than any other genetic makeup on the planet. And that's what the Henrietta Lacks gene proves, cells. The Henrietta Lacks cells, that's what that proves, that any other group on the planet Earth, the Africans were changing higher rate and more significantly than any other group because of what happened during slavery. With that, we're going to take a short pause. And when we come back, we're going to open up the floor for you, for any questions you may want to have or anything you want to be repeated. We'll be able to do that for you. But we want to just take a short pause. And if you want to ask a question or make a comment, because we have some other things we definitely want you to hear, just push the one on your phone, then we can get into the other portion of what we are discussing this evening. Let's go with this.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you so very much. Just want to mention now we are in the going into the next portion of our program, but now we're opening up the floor too for any questions or comments you may have. We just ask you to be considerate that we ask you to try to stay on the subject that we're dealing with, but you may have some things you want to look at and bring our attention to, and we welcome that also, because this is open mic night. This is the night where we don't stay as strictly to the subject in terms of questioning and answering and comments as we normally would. But we ask you to keep in mind that we do have a particular subject matter we'd like to cover, even during open mic night. And we'd like to get that covered because we're limited to time ourselves, just like we're saying to you. But now, if you have any questions or comments, hit the one on your phone. We could just, I'll bring you in anytime. You don't have to wait. I could bring you in, and then you can, here we have area code 914.
Assalamu alaikum. Area code 914.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'll pay you bitch Allah.
All right.
When we start moving things like moving, there always an enemy among you. They always mm-hmm. do that.
Mm-hmm.
When Imam came in, leadership, we would make mm-hmm. a lot of progress under Elijah Muhammad, sent by the black man. But when the man came, he mm-hmm. changed all of that, and he brought us into Islam. And that's where those mm-hmm. have been watching Imam. I said, since 19, really, before he was born, you're watching him, mm-hmm. you saw the growth he's making. And so he saw making alliance with other people, other groups,
mm-hmm.
big people. And that's why they said,
mm-hmm.
now it's time we start sending some enemy among him. And that's when
right.
they came the idea of that 80% that did not support the man, put them among them, and they will deter things. They'll turn things around. And that's what they did,
mm-hmm.
that 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still among us, but we're going to go past them. We're going to knock them out the same way we did before, and we're going to keep on making
mm-hmm.
progress. We're going to keep on making
right.
progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Shahid, for giving us the history.
Yes. Yes, that's we are doing it because we want to keep in mind, too, we say this every time we're here, but we would like to just make it a note of it. History is power, not just knowledge. History is the power pack to cause the people to move forward, the knowledge of themselves. And they're doing everything they can to keep that from us. They're telling us we are people of color, we are this and they're that. Let's go to another caller here. Area code 321. Area code 321.
Yes. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Shahid, Elaysi, Umar, Melbourne, Florida. Enjoying the discussion. I just wanted to, I may have missed whether you did said it or not, but there recently was a African-American male elected in Tulsa, and he did
mm-hmm.
he did his acceptance speech at that memorial for that incident of a massacre, and also tonight there's a trailer. They're doing a bio on the 1898 Winston-Salem massacre. I think over 300 people were killed in that community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's mm-hmm. a bio biography that's coming on tonight. I'm not on PBS. They say it's going to be about
mm-hmm.
that incident in
mm-hmm.
in North Carolina, Winston-Salem.
Mm-hmm.
So just wanted to share those things. Thank you for your diligence and information you're sharing. Thanks.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Walaikum assalam. Now, those of you who have questions or comments, you just hit the one on your phone. We would stop and bring you in. Let's get back to our subject because it's real important, and what those two comments now are close to what we're talking about. The European has been diligently trying to stop the African from gaining the knowledge of himself. This is one of the things that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad stressed so much, the knowledge of self. It was so important that even to get the African-American people to move, a idea and concept was brought into play about the African-American being the lost, found, tribe of Shabazz. See, although people may look at that and say, well, that wasn't really true. But the point is, sometimes to save a person's life, you have to push them. And after you push them out of the way, then you can talk with them and tell them why you shoved them. It may be a car might have been coming or something. You might have to push them out the way of the car. And it may even hurt them. It didn't kill them, but that car would have killed them. See, so sometimes our leaders come into that kind of thinking. And so when they come in that kind of thinking, sometimes they do those things to bring about a change in the people. We have enough information now. We have enough information amongst ourselves to really be able to bring about a change. Ask yourself this question. We're still talking about the genetic change now, the genetic change of the African-American people. Ask yourself this question. Looking at the Henrietta Lacks, looking at they got success when they did that Tuskegee experiment and put syphilis into our people, They got information from that. And looking at all of the things that you could see on the surface that they kept quiet before, but they couldn't keep them quiet because they were entering into the world arena. And the world arena, being dominated areas throughout the world. And when they do things to earn money, they put together concepts and ideas. And a lot of it developed from old history that they had back in Greece when they had the Olympics. And they had those physical challenging kind of games and things of that nature. Now, they weren't the only countries doing that. But the fact of the matter is they brought that forth into the modern time. And when they found out these unique qualities of the African American, we became African American after 1783. That's when we became African American. That's when our forefathers deemed themselves as African American, our foreparents. Now, the European found that the African American had skills. They already thought we could, because of what they thought about the African in Africa, he could stay in the sun longer, he could work harder, he'd do all those kind of things. They had that thinking. But now when you put them on an arena where the odds are even, you put them in an arena where they don't have any advantage and no one else has an advantage over them, and just the winner comes out. They tried some of those things in boxing. They found out that Jack Johnson was, and he wasn't the only one now. I'm only mentioning his name. Jack Johnson was the first heavyweight champion. They had a couple of athletes, African-American athletes on that level. Remember now, we're only 12% of the population, but yet they're dominating. And then when they went to the Olympics, the first time they was able to get into the Olympics, Jesse Owens and another African-American dominated in their events. Domination. It wasn't like they was close to somebody or somebody was close to them. No, they dominated. In the 100 meters, the 100-yard dash, as we call them back there in those days, it was Jesse Owens and his other brother who was African too, African-American, not from Africa, but from here. So then you go into baseball. Once they was into baseball, which is all athletics again, they just took over everything. Baseball, football, basketball, all the sports that they went into and they had the freedom to go into, they began to dominate at a large, large rate, fast. And it wasn't just sports. They tell you that because they don't want you to know that physical change, it was a physical change that took place. And the brain is physical. The brain is not some kind of thing hanging over on a tree and then we go get it when we need it and put it in our head. No, the brain is in the mind, in the cranium of the head, and it grows as physical. And the cells in the brain grow as physical. And all of those cells begin to produce because of the action and reaction of those cells. All that was happening in the African American people. That's why we started inventing things. That's why when Edison tried to get the light bulb, he and several other European Americans were trying to invent the light bulb. They couldn't get it to burn for any length of time because it didn't have that knowledge. But Louis Latimer stepped in. African Americans stepped in and showed them how to make it burn. But he invented the carbon filament. And that's why you could go to your wall now, or clap your hand and your light comes on and stays on because of Louis Latimer. Now, that's just a few, one or two, but you're talking about the stoplights. You're talking about all of these things in medicine and science. We have doctors who come up and you heard of the blue baby syndrome. That was changed by an African-American. And he wasn't even a doctor. He worked around the doctor that John Hopkins. And the doctor just saw how intelligent he was. He was intelligent African American. But our uniqueness is not just being intelligent, but our uniqueness is to see in a situation that others don't see. And it's the same way with our the part you can see, like the physical ability to run and jump. You can see that, pretty obvious. But you don't get a chance to really see how the brain is operating when it sees when you come across a problem that has to be solved by your thinking. And your mind just can look at the simplicity of it all and put it together and come up with things such as the transplanting of the heart. If we are just talking about just one thing, one incident, okay. But you, when you really look at it, and if you really take some time to examine it, you go see we're talking about many things, hundreds and hundreds of things and characteristics that exemplify the uniqueness of the African American people. Not to even talk about singing, not to talk about music. Now, we didn't bring the piano to America. We didn't bring the guitar to America. Sure, our people had instruments in Africa. But they wouldn't even let us have they stopped us from even in America, in North America here, stopped us even playing the drums. But because of their uniqueness, the African can watch and listen to the European playing the piano or whatever they would do, and the African in his spare time would generate melodies and concepts and ideas to bring in a whole new way of thinking about music and performing music. All this music you see in the world, it came from here, from the one slave here, the people from here in North America, the African American people, all of it, all go all across the world. And you know where that music is comes from, what area it comes from in the mind? It comes from an area in the brain. It comes from the area in the brain, the same area which produces mathematics. The same area of the brain where mathematics come from is the same area of the brain where the patterns are used in music. How they generate these ideas? How did John Coltrane come up with something that didn't even exist, and just bring it into existence because of the nature in which he was created? Now, this is not just him. We could just go all through these kinds of things. But the point we should see, and what I'm trying to bring forth here, is the uniqueness of the African-American people. And it's not just a one-stop thing. It's all across the board. We have this quality going on. All through the African-American community, we have this growing and developing. And the odds are, had this trajectory stayed in line with the production and the progress we were making, we would have been far ahead of any group, people in America. The billionaires that now that the Ford magazine is carrying, that the European, we'd have been in front of all of them. Our numbers would have been greater. The statistics shows at the growth we were growing, the German-American, the Irish-American, the Italian-American, none of them was growing as fast as we were. And they had a head start in terms of the financial growth because they had a head start. Although we were the ones who came up with the concept of how you really could bring steel into existence, because you remember, we were the blacksmiths, colonial America. And blacksmiths are the ones who worked with the iron and bringing iron ore and other metals to blend together and produce steel. We was at the base of that. And when we did get a chance to get into it, like Patterson, who made the car, the automobile, African-American who built an automobile in 1915, the same as Henry Ford, his father was the one that had the best steel-producing carriage house process in Ohio. We made the finest steel. Now, this is the kind of information that we should have been getting generation after generation on the normal process of what cultures are designed to do for people. The culture of every people is designed to carry from one generation to the next. One generation to the next, it carries. Here's the way it's expressed. Culture is a distinct social system that holds its people together and propels them into the future. It is the accumulation of cumulative deposit of knowledge, language, experiences, beliefs, values, attitudes, meaning of hierarchies, religion, notions of time, roles, relationships, familial relationships, concepts of the universe, the material objects and possessions acquired by its people in the course of generations through individual and group striving. That's what a culture is. Now they tell you a culture is a hip hop culture because they think we ain't gonna look it up. Hip hop it just comes out of response of our energy, our uniqueness. It's not our culture. It comes out of us. Hip hop and all other things they like to throw at us to take us off the course of what a culture really is and how powerful it is. Your concept of the universe. Right now, your concept of the universe and of God and religion, whatever you want to put it on, most of it comes from the European American. Most of it comes from the European American who used religion as a tool to colonize the world. Now, I know some of us might not like that idea that our religion comes from the European colonizer during his time of the colonization of the world. But it's a fact. It's an absolute fact. Now, whether we don't agree with that fact or not, it's a fact. I want to just give you a little bit of what this means by another African-American scholar, one that you probably heard about. We're going to talk about this for a minute. John Henry Clark. We cannot ask people who programmed us. This is the word he's using now. We cannot ask people who programmed us into oblivion to program us out of it. I mean, we have been conditioned to believe some things that just, you almost can't say they're not relevant or relevant, but when you have to say that in a normal run of things, they do not make sense. He went on, he says, education has but one honorable purpose. One honorable purpose. Only one. One alone. And anything else is nonsense. Now that's what John Henry Clark was, the scholar, African-American scholar, who's done a lot of work, and some of you have read some of his things. Read some of it slower. Read it slower and go through it. Don't just read it and throw it on the shelf. That right there, that there alone. He's saying, we cannot ask a people who programmed us into oblivion to program us out of it. Now, that's telling us no matter what schools we go to, no matter what degrees we get, if we still rely on their logic, we will not come out of the situation. If we still rely on their logic to bring us to the next step, we cannot advance. No further than they want us to advance. It's education has but one honorable purpose, one alone. Everything else is nonsense. We have to start thinking in a reality of ourselves. If we can't think in a reality of ourselves, we must, if you cannot wake up and think of yourself, and the only way you can wake up and move your day along is to include another people, then you can never come out that oblivion, out of that program that we've been programmed. And all of us are part of it. It's not something that I don't have or someone else doesn't have. Every one of us. The nation of Islam, brought into existence by Farad Muhammad to bring up a group that would begin to isolate the people, isolate a group of the people out of the programming of the European American, created a hole like a cocoon to see that this programming that the African American is in, we can't come out of it at the hands of the European American. This is why that concept was instituted about the white man is the devil and the black man is God. It was instituted to cause the African American people to believe in their concept and knowledge of evaluating their own ability to think. Evaluating their own ability to think beyond that which the European American had put us in. We, whether you're Christian or Jew or Muslim, doesn't make any difference. We all benefited by one of us being able to escape out of the programming of the European American. And that, most of you know, was Imam Rushdie Muhammad. Now, his mission was primarily to expose the rest of the African American, not just Muslim. We need to get that out of our mind. It's not just Muslim. It's the African American people. To begin to think on their own. To begin to think for themselves. This is what his responsibility was. So he encouraged all the African Americans to follow the logic of your logic, your reasoning. You should follow the logic to his logical conclusion. Follow the logic to his logical conclusion. And he understood that if you do that, you're going to be able to work your way out of the programming that was put in us and on us by the European American and the European colonization of the world. So with that, we want to take a short pause again and keep that in mind. Now, we're going to come back to this subject and deal with it. Before we go into break, let us take another caller, area code 636.
Yes, assalamu alaikum. This is, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, this is Kareem Hamid calling in from St. Louis, Missouri. And alhamdulillah for everything that you are saying. You know, the European recognized the genetic strength of the Africans. That's why they devised a scheme to enslave them and have them enter this part of the world and do the hard labor, do the hard, no other. They had tried the indigenous people here to enslave them, but they could not stand up to it. They were dying in droves. The same thing happened in Central and South America also. They tried to enslave the indigenous people of that region. But they noticed a superiority in physicality among the Africans. and they went and captured them because of the uniqueness that they were able to stand up under the pressure that was being placed on them. And we survived. Praise be to Allah. We survived. And I agree with you. We have to begin to think. Habit will defeat our five senses. Habit. To just do things by habit. To say, well, this is just how we do things, man. And you question the logic. And they'll say, well, this is how we have always done it. Without thinking, is it beneficial to me? Is it serving my purpose? Or am I just doing this by habit? So I agree with you. We need to begin to think, to even on our behavior. How much of this is habit? The genetic memory bank, and I'm grateful that you mentioned the genes, the genetic memory bank. These people, in, they put us in such an oppressive position that that oppression was unique. Never had a people been placed under that much human pressure. And that has entered our genetic memory bank. That the genes do not forget. So we must heal ourselves by beginning to question our habits and begin to think. Use our five senses and begin to think and come out of habit. So I'm grateful for what you are presenting this evening. It is it's crucial. It's critical. At this stage in our life, we have to stop just doing things by habit and stop and think. Is there a better way? Yes, sir. Thank you, my brother.
Okay, your God, continue
to bless you and us.
We have area code 216. Area code 216. Maybe they went on. If you go out and come back in, area code 216, I'll bring you into the queue. Looks like you was in there for a minute. But just push the one on your phone when you come back in. Yes, we want to just take a short pause and make an announcement here.
Oh,
and then we'll get back with that one.
One, we most likely do not recognize our present-day status as a comfort zone. We've created a life, a position, a station that we have become very comfortable with, very ease with. And when someone may say, you can improve on that, they say, well, I'm at my maximum. I'm doing great. Look at all what I've done. Look what I've accomplished. We don't understand or see in ourselves that there is more to be given, more to be done, whether it's individually or collectively. I think one is a blues song that says, I've been down so long that down seems up.
I'm the love. Well, we're going to continue on, and those of you who have a comment or would like to make a comment, push the one on your phone, and we'll bring you in, and you can make your comment or ask your question. We want to continue with our original point, and that we've been making and supporting about our uniqueness, and understand the uniqueness comes from various ways, and not just that. See, when the European American tapped into They didn't invent the slave trade. They tapped into the slave trade. Slavery has been going on in the world, slavery, eons of time. And most of the time you find when you see slavery, you'll find people enslaving their own people. The Greeks enslaved the Greeks. Well, every time they conquer somebody, they put them in their slave, in their servitude. So, but here, chattel slavery was one of the things that this country was sort of unique in. It wasn't as unique, meaning nowhere else in the world that it was going on, but it was unique because it led them to that breeding process, the slave breeding. And that's what's unique about the slaves in America underwent a breeding process much greater than any other place on the earth. And we just showed when we started off, we showed the difference between 1.3 million and 4.4 million. That's over three times the number they grew and three times the amount of people, which tells us, gives us an idea, gives us enough evidence to suggest that slave breeding was causing that, because they had already stopped the slave trade. They had already stopped the slave trade by law. First when the British, they stopped it, that any country or people be found transporting slaves to North America, the United States of North America, would be faced the law. And then the United States came in a year later. So we know that increase came from the breeding. And what we should look at is what does that mean? If you take an English terrier and an English bulldog and put them together, you come up with what? You come up with the American pit bull. You come up with the pit bull. That's where the pit bull comes from. The pit bull comes from breeding. They breed it because the terrier has looked quicker and the bulldog is a little stronger. They put them together and they got a quick, big animal. That's what the American bull. Not only that, all across the world, this is not a new thing. It's just that they don't talk about it when it comes down to the African people, because that might cause some African Americans to begin to recognize the importance of our coming together. And if those who don't feel comfortable with that, then look at God's input in that. God's input in that, because God says he makes a new people. He makes a culture. So was this his process, that the European thought they were doing something when actually there was a bigger picture? There was a bigger picture. A new concept, a new idea was coming into existence, and this process was part of what development came about? Look at that long Egypt state, and you read the Bibles and books, you see how the Egyptians, they would cut a people's heads off and all those little kind of things. But out of that came another people. They migrated from them into another people. The Israelites came. And the same knowledge that the Egyptians had in terms of religiously speaking, the Israelites, they developed that knowledge, and they were the ones who ended up with the ability to bring that knowledge into the world. See, so it's not unheard of to look at the conditions of the African-American people and believe and have a good concept that God, the creator of the universe, part of this creation of the African-American people. See, if we don't see it as an African-American people, then all we see is African people being misused, African people being mistreated, African people being raped. That's the way they want us to look at that. But if you look at it as an African-American people, which means that a new people were created here on this part of the planet that don't exist anywhere else in the world, with a new genetic makeup, with a new genetic skills and something they can be proud of, then we won't be able to see the importance of what happened with our people here in America. It's important. It's important. I know it's hard for some of us to think of that, because the European American has been showing their brother, I forgot the slave's name, with all these whips on his back. He was showing all that and talking about how bad they treat, and every chance they get to stop somebody in the car and try to shoot them or whatever, they want us to think of this place as being the hell, being the furnace. They don't want us to think of this place as being the place where God created a new people. They don't want us to think those thoughts. What we're talking about now, they don't want us to even begin to think like this. They don't want us to even try to think like this. But it's something we must consider based on the evidence. Something we must consider based on the information and the facts. Our ability, superior or inferior, was created right here in America. Whatever we want to call it. We want to call it inferior or superior, the status quo or whatever we want to give it. It happened right here in America. This is the place. This is the place that the European American colonized the Native American and brought in and broke away from England along with the African who was here, fought side by side, and they won their freedom, their independence from Great Britain. And that's what produced the African American and the European American. And that's after the genetic change is taking place now. There are many books and information you can get to find a lot of this information. But let's take another call, because we're going to be running out of time soon. It's about 6:23. Okay, let's take another caller at area code 347. Area code 347. You're on. Yes.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam. Walaikum assalam. How are you doing?
Allahu Akbar. I'm doing very well. Enjoying the experience of your presentation this evening, and appreciating the urgency that you are speaking in delivering this information, the research based on the research that you've done, and trying to reinforce the concept that relying on our intellect, our God-given intellect, is following a course of independent thinking will guide us to the destiny that is prepared for us. I just want to say that I'm appreciating this because I remember as a child the way that my parents used to encourage us to become better. And what they meant by better, there always seemed to be an acceleration or a very, very creative level that we could aspire to. And they encouraged us as children to use our minds to get there. This is what I hear your emphasis on today. I can't agree more with you about how important it is, the concept of following logic, making connections, looking at our past and seeing it as Imam W.D. Muhammad had guided us through his insights to see ourselves being evolved as a new people. This is so critical. If we don't believe this about what Allah had ordained or what his plan was, we will not be able to come into the appreciation of the evolution that we've been given in the human excellence category. We were chosen. We went through whatever we went through, our experience in enslavement, the colonization, all of that. But it was carrying us by Allah's design to a new creation. And I'm just so grateful that you're taking the time to explain this in the detail. And I wish there were many, many more people listening on this line so they can get a true perception of who they really are and how our development was strategically undermined for us to miss the boat but that by the grace of Allah, the mercy of Allah, and the introduction to Quran, etc., many, many more things that Allah has granted us in His mercy, we will, inshallah, make it to that point. So I want to just appreciate what you're sharing. And thank Allah and pray that people come to that concept. All right. As-salamu alaykum now. Thank you.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Thank you very much. That many of the statements that many of you have been making is right on time, and it helps me now. I don't have to make some of those statements because you're making them, and that's what's going on. You're right on time. But I do want to give us a little bit more about Clark, John Henry Clark, was talking about. He says, dealing with the same subject, he says, after he says any other about education, he said that education is but one honorable purpose, one alone, and any other, anything else is nonsense. Then he says they're talking about education now, that is to train the student to be a respectful and responsible handler of power. I mean, are y'all getting this?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, listen what this is going on here. This is what he's saying, and when you really get the impact of this, you say, wow. You can see why the Europeans doing all these tricks and things that we don't see, things that are happening to us, we don't even know they're happening to us. But he's explaining this here. He says anything else is not talking about any education is the what? He's saying it has one honorable purpose, one alone. Anything else is nonsense, he's saying. He said, and that is to train the student to be a handler of power.
And may I interject that this is really, really critical that we understand the right power, especially that Allah has created that space for us. We've been, I interviewed John Henry Clark early in my development as a Pan-Africanist before I became Muslim. But I was always impressed with his take on the dignity of education. And my mother and father must have been following him before they even had us as children, because these principles that he wrote about and stood for and rehearsed were a part of our upbringing. We didn't know this, but at least my mother, being able to immerse us in this concept, like you're talking about power and dignity. And when we look at the development Project 2025, I won't go into it in any depth right now, but when we look into those 900 pages, this is the purpose of them writing this scheme. But Allah is the best of planners, and we have to know and understand that. I'll stop right there.
Alhamdulillah. And to carry on with that point, he's saying here, people do not train you on how to take power away from them. So even all of the education we get, all everything, you have to understand, we're not being educated to get control of the power to run anything.
That's right.
And then he said they do not do that. Then he says, when the holder of power and they hold that power by controlling you.
Yeah.
Now, there's many things we go on this program here about the control, the subliminal seduction, and all those kind of things, how these things control the mind of the people. This is why it's so important, even in our title here, of our inheriting the power of mental freedom. Even that is so important. Now he's saying that the power and how, and then it goes on here. He says, people do not train you to take that power away from them. When they hold this power is for controlling you. To expect this of a people is traditionally in terms. Now, that spelling is incorrect. I think what he's saying here is a contradiction. I think that's the word supposed to be there. He says, to expect this is a contradiction in terms. Yes, that's the word it's supposed to be there. Contradiction of terms, because what it's saying is that I saw a definition of this contradiction of terms. Contradiction of terms are terms where a phrase or expression in which it's not really the component words are contradict one another. So what he's saying is for us to think that we're going to get our freedom from the same people who have taken it from us, it doesn't make any sense. He said it contradicts the thinking of it is contradictory in the mind, in the terms. We just have to step away from that kind of thinking. Then he goes on now. He says it's contradictory. Hell yeah. Freedom is something you do not wish upon. We do not dream upon. Freedom is something you take with your own hands. He's talking about freedom now. He's talking about freedom.
Yeah.
Then he says, when people dictate the content of education, they are dictating what goes into your mind. This is, you see, these things are so important for us to get some grasp on, get some understanding on. When we don't understand these things, we're missing the root of our existence. Our existence is at the whim of someone else's existence. And for us to think anything different means that we are somewhat, this would be saying we're out of our mind.
That's right.
We're out of our mind. And when he goes into this, and you can look at this. Go to on the internet and pick this up. And it's a quote that he made. And then he said, when people dictate the context of education, they dictate the context of the mind. And then he says, though you might lie about it. And so long as you are in this position, you are some form of a slave.
Yes.
Of a slave. See, so now we ain't talking about slavery back there anymore. We ain't talking about 300 years ago no more. No. We're talking about today, this day, 2024.
Yes.
Free yourself, he says. Free yourself from it.
Yeah.
See, one moment you can have, but I don't want to hold you back, let me just finish this comment here. Free yourself from it, and do not expect others to do it for you. You must stop begging at the door of the people who reduced you to a beggar.
That's right.
Come on in, sister. You can go ahead and say what you wanted to say.
No, it's just beautiful.
But I just want to do.
I want to do anything but confirm and hope that people understand what you're saying. Like, because of that upbringing that I had, my mind as a child was set up to always go beyond the limits of my teachers. Like the thing that my mother would say to the five of us when she would head us out the door and we would walk to school, she said, remember the purpose that we're sending you to school for. We're not sending you there for a social experience.
for you to make friends and, you know, classmates and play on the schoolyard. She said, I will send you there so you can get what that teacher has. So mm-hmm. As a child, I'm saying, well, my mother, I must be able to do this because I wasn't used to her asking me to do things that she knew I couldn't do. She always seemed, me and my father, always had expectations of us that exceeded our childhood thinking. So it, being obedient in a home that was peaceful, and my mother and father had a transactional, beautiful relationship where they exchanged things. We were on the road of obedience. We didn't know how to question the expectations. So when I went to mm-hmm. school, my mother said, don't sit in the back of the classroom. Sit up front. She said, you did your mm-hmm. homework, so you're prepared. You know what the questions the teacher's going to be asking. And when the teacher asks these questions and conducts these discussions, raise your hand and answer. This is what she sent us mm-hmm. out the door with. So we knew right. that what happened was, as we grew up, being obedient to a parent told us that we had a capacity that our teachers were hoping we didn't have. In mm-hmm. other words, they were sort of riding herd to keep us at a certain
right.
level, lower level
right.
of utilizing oh. our mind. And so, oh. you know, it was the confidence that our parents gave us, all of us, not mm-hmm. just me, other people I'm sure had this experience too, is that mm-hmm. I was always inclined to aspire to my parents' expectation, not the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And when I became right. a teacher myself, I had to work with children who the teachers had always reduced, thinking that they didn't have certain capacities of learning.
Right.
And I knew that they did. You know, when I was teaching the kindergartners and the preschoolers, these children, they had a natural capacity for intellectual excellence. All I had to do is recognize it in them and mm-hmm. point it to, oh, you got this capacity. Oh, you got this gift. Oh, you can do this. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm happy you figured that out, because they were
right.
using what you're talking mm-hmm. about, the natural
right.
power of the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll stop right there, but I really appreciate you.
We're going to take another short pause and come back. And if you got some questions or comments, you're going to have to make them, because we're running out of time. And let's take this short
God's
pause
peace
again.
Be upon
then,
you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, we have some more callers. I want to just remind you, those of you who are just coming in or who've been in for a while, this is Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom, and I am your host, Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African Valalian American Griot. And we're here every Tuesday between 5 and 7 p.m. That's our hours. And this, we are hosting, we are platform of AM 360, which comes on daily here. And I want to remind those of you, we have a show coming after this, so when this goes out, be sure to hang around for courtship and marriage. Let's go to another caller. And I promise you, we're going to continue with this subject. We're not just going to finish, because it's not finished. We didn't finish the, but area code 972.
Assalamu alaikum. Israel family, Dallas, Texas.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Man, I'm enjoying the program. I came in late, so I just have one question. What book are you reading these excerpts from? Because these are wonderful.
Okay, the one I'm talking about is the excerpt I was just talking about is Dr. Clark. That's his it was his a quote that he was giving a lecture, and his
okay, thank you. I'm listening.
The other material comes from this some materials that I handle, and I can get you some information on the Negro market. Is something they took off that's been taken off the market, but we have access, and so. You have be sure you can get in touch at AM360, and they can get that information to you. And those of you who want to contact me by email, you could email me at Shahid_Abdullah. That's SHAHID_Abdullah, or you can call me direct at 908-296-2558. And whatever we don't have, we can guide you to it. We can show you how to get that information, and because there's a lot of good information out here. So, did you have any other comment you wanted to make, brother?
No, sir. I'm just listening and learning. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah. Well, we're coming down to the got about 15, 16 minutes left. Any more questions or comments? You can ask it. We're going to ask you to be a little brief because we have quite a number of people here. They have their hands up. When they get their hands up, we want them to be able to get in what they plan to say. We don't want to leave anyone out. But we want to remind you, those of you who've been listening, now this is a subject we're going to continue to develop because there's so much information here that we are missing, that when we do get a piece of it, there's an additional piece we have to add to it to really make it some, to get the impact we need to get from it. That, for those of you who are keeping track of this, that was the 1910 census. The 1810 census is the one you could find out those records that we're talking about. They speak of the number of slaves, 1.3 million people, African in America, and of that 1.3 million, 1.19 million of them were slaves. And then that, which means that we had some free African Americans at the same time. Africans, this was before. No, this is after. This is after 1783. So the Africans here, probably was calling themselves African American at that time, because that we have the proof in the sermon of General Cornwallis points out that the Africans who were fighting against Great Britain, fighting on the side of the Patriots, they call themselves African American. And they also talk about themselves as being of African descent. These are words is in that document called the Sermon of the Capture of General Cornwallis. You could go online and get that, and make sure you put by the African American, because there are other sermons out there by of the Capture of General Cornwallis by European Americans. But this one is by African Americans talking with African Americans, giving a talk to African Americans and why they want to throw their weight behind the Patriots against the King of Great Britain. And in that document, there's a 16-page document. There's a lot of information in it. So you can go online and just look it up, and you will find that Harvard is one of the schools that have it, but Yale was the one that came up with the discovery, as they say. But it's out there now, so you can find out that information. And the Negro market is something you're going to have to contact us directly because, like I said, they took it off the market. So we can see to it that you can get that. We have to look at these aspects to have a good understanding in our own mind. You see, it's not so much just telling people the truth. It's also clearing our own minds. Now, there's a situation we didn't talk about today, but we need to cover it, and we're going to cover it probably in a later session, that why do we think the way we think? Because we brainwashed. No, we're not brainwashed. See, we have to get away from those thinking. We weren't brainwashed. We didn't come to a situation where they changed us from one situation to another. That's a misinterpretation of the process. The process of slaves being brought to America and their culture being taken from them, wiped from their minds, and then changed them into slaves is not the process. That's not the way that happened. We came from different cultures. We wouldn't come from the one set culture in Africa. We came from different cultures. We spoke different languages, and we believed in God differently. We had different religious backgrounds. 15 to 20% were Muslim, and that means that we got about 70 to 85% who weren't. See, so they had their own beliefs and concepts of how they saw religion. But because we were put together in such a manner, it was very difficult for them to communicate in their own language with one another. And every time they made an attempt to do that, the European slave master saw it as an attempt to try to get free from them. So they had the African slaves created their own language, created a language that's not spoken in Europe, it's not spoken in Africa, it's not spoken anywhere but here, and it's called the Geechee language. It sounds like English. It sounds like English, but it has some of the characteristics that for those of you who are Muslim, there's a word that you probably even hear your parents use. You might even be using it yourself. You ever hear people say, "Well, you fitting to get in trouble, or you fitting it? Something fitting to happen to you? Fitting it? Fitting it is a word that comes from the Quran. It means trouble. It means trouble. It means trouble. That's what it means. And they brought that word into their language when it was creating this language. There are many, many, many other words. We got materials we're going to be distributing soon that will help people understand this Geechee language. And those of you in the South, you people are speaking around you, all the way around you. And because I know my parents and my father was from Georgia, my mother was from South Carolina, so it's all over. They just made us ashamed of it. But it's the same way that the Jews created Yiddish in Germany. See, Yiddish doesn't come from the East. It comes from their time in Germany. They took the German language and used it as a cover language, and they put Hebrew with it, Aramaic with it, and they had to use a lot of the Arabic words because in order to understand Hebrew, they had to look at Arabic. The scholars in Hebrew even today, the scholars in Hebrew, if they start looking in their history, they have to deal with the Arabic because that was like the foundation. But the key is that our language, the Geechee language, our foreparents created it here to be a cover language so that they can talk with each other openly, and the European slave master wouldn't even know what they were talking about. They just thought they were talking bad English, but they were making ideas. That's how they got into building Fort Moose in Florida, one of the first settlements around 1670 something, where the first settlement that Africans built and on their own and independent of the European slave system. See, so and there's a lot more. It's a lot more. That's just some of it. But we do need to have a good understanding of ourselves. If we're walking around without a knowledge of ourselves and thinking that's okay, we're in trouble. We're going right back to what John Junior Clark was saying. Do we actually think that the person who into this way of thinking is going to help us out of it? Not going to happen. So we got to do it ourselves. We got to really start looking at all of the facts and figures and evidence and run them do, and we got to question each other. We got, when we come up, when we think we understand something about the Quran, about the Bible, or about the history, and one of the, and somebody else amongst us don't understand the way we do, we need to not think we're so right we can't hear the other side. We need to learn to collaborate. We need to learn to collaborate, because that's where our future go come from. Our future understanding will come from our ability to collaborate with one another. No, I don't see it that way, brother. I do see it that way, sister. I don't see it like that. What do you, how do you see it? Well, then what do you think it is? How can, let's put it together. Let's put it to the test.
Right.
Let's put it in the logic of coming to the logical conclusion.
See,
we
got
to start doing that kind of thing. And we can't be afraid of it. I think African-Americans, in most cases, are just too afraid of being questioned by their own people. Now, they'll be questioned by the European-Americans. European-Americans question until their pants fall down, but they just answer the question. But the, but when we question each other, a fight is getting ready to break out. You ain't supposed to question me. See, we got to get past that. We have to get past that and get to the point of saying, what do you mean by that? How should I be seeing that? And how, I mean it this way. You mean that that way. Some of us can't take criticism. Some of us can't take criticism. They say, I thought that, so therefore you're supposed to accept that. That's not the way it works.
That's not
the way it works. It works like if you're willing to say something, you have to be willing to get the negative and positive, because only Allah is perfect. That's what we have to see it like that. Only Allah, when it's put out something, that's it. So us, we say something, somebody go say, oh, no, brother, that's not right. So, okay, let me show it. Let me prove it. If you don't have the tolerance to deal with questioning and answering, you can't move forward. You're locked up by the ignorance, and you're locked up by this idea of I'm better than thee. And those of you who read Quran, you know that's a mark of shaitan. I am better than thee. We never should get that attitude. We should say, okay, what do you mean by that? Get used to questioning each other on a way we get good feedback. Because Allah is the God of all of us, so therefore our information is coming from this, the Creator, through us.
May I interject? We used to, in the old days, trust each other that somebody, that God was going to give some one of us the clarity, the answer, the truth of the matter. That used to be in the old days.
Well, we can still have that. We can still have that, but we need to stop looking for the one, though. We don't need the four to be. The one already came. That's it. It's over. We ain't looking for
Brother Saheed, I totally understand that. That's not what I'm saying.
I'm making a quick announcement with your
urgency and encouragement for us to have what we call shura bena home. We have to learn how to talk together and listen to one another.
Right.
It's called critical thinking and critical listening. They teach courses now on people how to perfect that so we can out of it the intelligence, because Allah, number one, he doesn't like, my understanding of Quran, Allah doesn't like to do things in a mysterious way. And you know, in the Christian faith, you know, God is a book things in a mysterious way.
He puts things in manners where we can understand.
We just have to believe that and work for it.
We'll take this
up later. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Let me let you know that following us in a few minutes is a program called Courtship and Marriage. That's going to be coming right on, so you can stand by and get that. That's a beautiful program talking about the importance of understanding the idea of courtship and marriage, especially those of us who get married maybe your second time around or third time around. This program offers a lot. Whether you be a single brother or sister, this helps a lot. So be sure to stay tuned, and to be on in about less than 5 minutes? Yeah, 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. So be sure to stay here and listen to it. And we're going to be back next week. Be back next week at same time at 5 o'clock. Yes, Eastern Standard Time, 2 o'clock West Coast. And we're on from 5 to 7 every Tuesday. And we do have different subjects, but our understanding and basis coming from culture primarily. We are driven by the concept of culture and the importance of it. Although we talk about other things in terms of finance, but we believe that to be part of culture. The religion, we believe that to be part of culture. Economics, we believe that to be part of culture. I was going to talk a little bit about the election, but we didn't get a chance to get to that. This, to me, is more important because, like I said earlier, when we started out, I've been through a lot of elections, seen a lot of presidents, and every time an election is over, the sun still comes up. So we got work to do. That's all the way I see it. No matter who's in office, we got work to do to help our people. But I thank you all for so much for coming out and listening and giving your input because it's very important that we take up where we others have left off to talk with each other, develop ideas and concepts that we are blessed to come up with, and move to the next stage of our development and growth. So we're going to close out, and I'm going to close out with A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitani Rajeem, saying we speak refuge from enemy, and I want to greet you all in the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum
assalam. Assalamu alaikum.
Not so long.